The first time that Craig Dudnick met Viola Hilsman, he was a lonely kid at college, and she was the cook at a campus fraternity. Her kitchen was a place where she dispensed both home-cooked food and advice. She was warm but tough, and that's how she got the name Coach. Craig spent a lot of time with her. Their friendship became so profound that years later, when Coach was in her 80s and needed help, Craig came back. He moved in with her, knowing all the time that his friends and people in Coach's mainly African-American neighborhood wondered about the two of them.
You know, it's one thing to stay a week and help her, but to move in was another thing. And I could sense sometimes, what's this, you know, white gentleman doing, you know, just all the time, you know, with this woman, taking her around and all of that. We would go grocery shopping and do all of those kind of things. But I really believe in my heart, I'd made up my mind anyway, that I was going to stay with her. I really think that I have to just say I just love the person. I love Coach, you know.
Craig stayed with Coach until the day she died. And he still lives in that house, savoring a depth of friendship that many of us will never know. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story.
The Story is produced by North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. It's co-produced and distributed by American Public Media.
I was unpacking a few Christmas books the other day and noticing how many of those stories talk about family in very traditional ways. Children nestled snug in their beds, Mama in her kerchief, I in my cap, that kind of thing. The story that Craig Dudnick tells about his long friendship with a woman called Coach has me thinking that there's really no limit to what makes a family, or when friends become so close that they are family. Craig Dudnick was 19 years old when he first met Coach. At the time, she was already into her 70s. She and her husband Tinsley worked in the kitchen of a fraternity house at Northwestern University. Now, for some reason that Craig couldn't pin down, at that time in college, he was just unhappy.
You know, it's a situation where you think, this should be the most exciting time of my life, and I was just miserable, really miserable. And, you know, I really couldn't pinpoint what it was that, you know, lack of self-confidence, those kinds of things.
Were you in a dorm, or where were you living?
I was in a dorm.
Yeah.
In a dorm. And a close friend and I both got into Northwestern. We both didn't expect to get into Northwestern. And we both went to, you know, this college, and he joined this fraternity. And he was trying to get me to join the fraternity, and I was against the Greek stuff. I didn't really, that really didn't appeal to me. And while I was playing football, this would have been my sophomore year, I went over there, and he was again trying to get me to come into the house, and we had dinner at the fraternity, and he brought me in to meet Coach and Tinsley. And I was just really impressed with the food. It was really good. And there was something about her. You know, I just can't put my finger on it, but she just seemed like, you know, just a kind, strong figure. And
now, when you first met her, you were in her kitchen or you were sitting in the dining room of the fraternity?
In her kitchen, yeah. in the kitchen of the fraternity. This was common practice because I guess, you know, that a lot of people were impressed with Mrs. Hilsman.
She was kind of a star of that fraternity, was she?
She was. She had that kind of personality. She attracted people.
Was that because she was loud in some way and would command attention when she'd come into a room?
She was interested in you. She was interested in the people. She genuinely made you feel like she wanted to see you, wanted to know you, was excited about you, you know. And when you come across people who like you, you know, it makes you feel very comfortable. And that's what you felt with her. She'd say, hi, you know, how you doing? You know, good to know you. And, you know, just that kind of thing. She was a person who really loved people. And so you just caught a little bit of that, just a little bit of that.
And this came your way at a time when you were, like, looking for someone who was friendly and outgoing, right?
I didn't put that together at the time. I mean, it didn't all cross, but all I computed was a good feeling. This felt good.
Coach's real name was Viola Hilsman. But as Craig Dudnick told me, she'd created a kitchen with an atmosphere where the guys in the frat house came to hang out and get advice, and she offered them this mix of encouragement and discipline, and so they called her Coach. Soon after Craig met her, he joined the fraternity.
I failed archaeology. And it was just, you know, that feeling of not really knowing how to get myself on course. And I had a conversation with Coach. I remember her telling me that football wasn't for me, that this wasn't for me, and that I should, you know, quit the team.
How would she have known that, Craig?
I think when you first join the house that you come over there for dinner sometimes before you've moved in. And so I had begun to get to know her, and I had begun to talk to her. She was really crafty in how she got at people, you know, and she, not just me, but a lot of people had different troubles of different kinds. And it was never like, okay, tell me what your trouble is. But she had the ability to look at a person and tell if there was something wrong, if there's something. She just had this knack with people and wanted you to be happy.
So what did she tell you to do about the football team?
She said, I think I would leave that alone. It's not for you. That was always her words. It's not for you. I knew she was right. But there was a little voice in my head saying, if I quit this, I'm going to quit everything. But I trusted her. I did that on trust.
So you did quit?
I quit and was actually working in the kitchen now with her. I was now her pot man for the lunch dishes. And the next quarter, I made the honor roll. It completely turned around. And I didn't like just, you know, singing in the rain all at once. But I noticed that I felt better. There was a system to what I was doing.
How much of that just turnaround that you're describing do you credit mm-hmm. to Coach? How much did she have to do with that?
She had a lot to do with it because her kitchen was so organized. And the feeling of warmth and of home in that kitchen, it's difficult to put into words, but you just felt like you had a grip on life and an understanding and something, you know, you had something behind you. You know, you had something to cling on to, some kind of structure, something to grow. And more than that, by saying that football wasn't for you, you know, she was letting Ness saying, well, let's find out what is for you. You know, let your real self come out, that you don't have to be this. You know, it's all that. She was real subtle in this, that you don't have to do this. You know, you don't have to be something you're not. You can be yourself. And I think, in essence, you know, that's what ends up happening when you let your real self come out, when you can just be yourself, then you begin to become happier and you begin to feel different. Life begins to look different to you.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to the story of an unusual friendship between a young white college kid and the older African-American woman who ran the fraternity kitchen. The story of a friendship between Craig and Coach.
One side of her was so gentle and sweet and loving, and the other side was the very strict disciplinarian. You know, when it's time to cook, cook. You know, when you have to clean the pots, they better be clean. And, you know, and the kitchen had to be just, if the kitchen wasn't clean, she would go home. If they hadn't cleaned the kitchen, she would go home and the guys would have to clean the kitchen and come get her. The thing about her, when she made up her mind, you know, you couldn't sweet talk her. There was none of that. You know, she was very clear that she would not clean and she would not cook in a dirty kitchen. So when somebody like that who means business is that kind to you and tells you these things, it seems to have more weight, you know, that she was somebody telling you these things about yourself. Unless you felt that way, that if she says that, maybe I can do this.
And while you were spending time at the fraternity house and working with her in the kitchen as her pot man, did you wind up spending more time with Coach than the other people in the fraternity?
Yeah, slow but sure. Because I remember that I stayed in Chicago the next summer. And like you'd go over to her house and paint her garage, you know, do little chores around her house. And it became an extension of the kitchen. You know, I'm sure I'm not the only one. You just couldn't get enough of this nourishment that she was giving you.
Did she have children of her own, Craig?
No, she had no children.
And did she treat you and the other guys in the frat house as sort of a, you know, her brood?
I don't think it was, you know, I didn't feel as though I was being mothered. She's like a wise person, a mentor, a friend. Spending time with her was helping you, too. You know, just good things seem to happen in you know, school. And I don't know whether it was, but all that package. It was just that package. And, of course, you know, I wasn't putting it together then. I was always putting it together in the sense of, aren't I a good person for helping this woman out? I was always putting it on the other foot to myself. I would say, I'm helping this woman out, you know, and I'm spending time with her. And when it really was the other way around.
When Craig Dubnyk finished college, he left Chicago and moved to Syracuse, New York, where he started his career as a cameraman. About 4 years after he left, he was on the phone with his friend, and she had some disturbing news.
I was talking to Coach, and they let her go from the fraternity. And they didn't do it in a nice way.
Why would they do that if she was that well regarded?
That's what I said. I couldn't believe it. You know, the country was changing then. You know, it was the 80s were coming in. The guys are coming in. You know, they didn't like the fact that if the kitchen wasn't clean, they had to go get her. And they didn't give her last paycheck. I couldn't believe it. So I actually came back to Chicago to see what had happened. They said, oh, she, you know, stole some things, which was just outrageous, like, you know, toilet paper or something ridiculous. I mean, Coach had made draperies, had cooked extra parties for the guys, had done everything. This was an outrageous thing. And they gave her her last paycheck. And I guess that's really what rebonded us, my going back there for that, you know. But it was just so nasty, you know, to see these spoiled brats, you know, treat this great woman in this way, you know, for no reason.
Do you think there was an element of racism in the way
that
they treated her?
Yes, I know that now. I didn't see it then. It's classic. This is the way it always is, because they never come out and say it. But this is the way they do to people, you know. This is it.
Craig Dubnyk would soon come to know a lot more about Coach and her life, her church, her neighborhood, and her friends, because around that time, Coach's husband Tinsley was ill, and they needed help. So it was Craig's turn to give back. He moved to Chicago, and he moved in with Coach. He was with her when Tinsley died, and he was with her when she died. The friendship had become something special. I'll talk more with Craig about this in just a moment. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. The very best of friendships go both ways. And this is a time of year when we're reminded just how much that matters. When Craig Dubnyk first met Viola Hilsman, he was the one who needed help. He was the kid, kind of lost, at college, who found comfort and advice in a fraternity kitchen run by Viola. She fed him cookies and advice and gave him a kind of self-confidence he'd been lacking. Craig and the others at the frat house respected that advice so much they called her Coach. Years later, when Coach was in her 80s and her husband Tinsley was in the hospital, Craig came back.
I knocked on Coach's door, and she was thrilled to see me. She knew I was coming, but she didn't know when. You know, I just told her, I'm going to be there. And then I moved into the basement.
And stayed a little longer than you'd expected.
Well, yeah, circumstances, you know. It must have been about a week after I got there. Her husband got very sick and went into the hospital. At first, he needed a pacemaker. But what I really didn't think about on our phone conversations was her situation. Because she was such a strong person, you never felt a neediness of any type with her. She was always on top of the situation. And when I got there, she was caring for two other ladies. She's in her mid-80s. Mm-hmm. She was caring for another lady who was in her 90s and another lady who was nearly 90. And her husband, who was sick. Now her sick husband is in the hospital.
Did you start to help her then?
Yes. I could hardly keep up with her. She did all the washing, all the cooking, all the cleaning, was running this house. You know, and of course the house was immaculate, but it run with this military precision, you know. No waste, no nothing. And she was managing all this herself. We'd go to the hospital and I'd take her to the hospital. And sometimes she would send food to the hospital to her husband. And it was in that time that he asked me to look after her. He asked me if I would do that.
What did he say?
He said, you know, please look after my wife.
He was thinking that he might die? Is that why?
I don't think he knew what was going to happen. I mean, it was just a simple thing.
Right.
You know, but he said, please look after her. I said I would.
At the time, Craig Dubnyk figured it would be some time before he'd have to make good on that promise. Coach's husband, Tinsley, had spent a long time in the hospital, and he finally came home.
He'd come in through the front door, and he said, "Thank God I'm home." And then he came into the kitchen, and Coach cooked him this wonderful meal. I can still smell it. Lamb chops, greens, oh, the whole nine yards. And he looked so happy. And he said, "I'm going to eat, and I'm going to regain my strength." And that night, I had been sleeping in the basement. She had moved her bed next to his now in this room. And I was watching this documentary, and I heard him say, "Good night, Craig," because he was really hoarse. And I came in. I said, "Well, good night, good night." He said, "Good night, good night." He just made it a point to say good night to me. I went to bed, and just after midnight, Coach was yelling, "Craig, Craig, Craig, Craig." And I came up the back steps, and Tinsley was full of blood. His aorta had ruptured, and he was just coughing up blood. So I held his hands while Coach called the paramedics, and I could feel him slipping away. I never had that experience before, but I could just feel him. He was going. You know, that was it. And Coach knew that he was gone. This is being Coach. Started to call all the relatives. "Tinsley's dead. You know, Tinsley passed away. Tinsley passed away." And the paramedics came, but he was already gone. The day we went to the funeral, I remember I went outside in the front yard with her getting into the car. And all of a sudden, Coach just screamed, "Don't leave me. Don't leave me."
Was she talking to you, Craig, or was she talking to Tinsley?
Tinsley. "We're going to get into the car." And I just grabbed her before she was just going to faint. And I just grabbed onto her and held her up.
Sounds like an almost uncharacteristic burst of emotion from her.
It was. Very uncharacteristic.
Catch you off guard as well?
Yeah, it did. It did. Shocked me.
Yeah.
And she said, "No, I'm all right. I'm all right." You know, instantly she was more worried about me than herself. That was her way. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Then she was back. Then she was fine. Then she was Coach again, you know. Then she was Coach. We got in the car and went to the funeral.
You're listening to The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. Craig Dudnick made his new home in Coach's house. Her neighbors began to see her around Evanston with this much younger white man. The two of them became a couple of sorts. Craig took her shopping. He took her to church. Craig is Jewish, but Coach was able to tempt him up to the communion rail.
I remember helping her up to the where they give communion, take communion, and helping her up there. And all of a sudden, I see this little hand reach back with this little white glove, you know, for me to come. I couldn't refuse. I thought, well, that's one God, you know. And I went up there, and it was fine. And I was so proud to be. I always was proud. I always felt like when I was around her, I was with somebody great. I always felt she was her greatness, you know. And if that was it, I'm right along with her, and I'm just praying to the same God, you know, and that was it.
And what about her sort of interactions with other older women of that time, prayer meetings, that sort of thing? Would you go along on those?
They were wonderful, just like Coach. This community were the most wonderful people. You know, they would come up, and they would put their arms around me. "Hi, Craig." You know, they knew I was staying there with her, and they would just, Reverend Gradford, I remember, would come over and give prayer communion once a week, and they would sing and pray, and it was so holy and so spiritual. And Reverend Gradford would come over and said, "You know, I'm glad you're with, you know, Coach." You know, he would say, "I believe you're God sent," you know, things along those lines, you know, those things. I would just feel as same as I always felt around Coach. I was so welcome. They would just make you feel like you were loved and you were welcomed, and you just felt just so great in their presence. And it was just anywhere you'd go in the community, you just feel this. They all knew me, and I just loved them too, you know. And so I just had a wonderful experience with them.
Did anyone ever ask you why you spent so much time with her? I mean, did anybody raise an eyebrow? How come you're always going where Coach went?
Oh, I cook a lot of grief from some of my friends. "Oh, you going to marry Coach?" they would say. You know, they weren't privy to these other experiences. And yes, I took them. You know, it's one thing to stay a week and help her, but to move in was another thing. And I could sense sometimes that sometimes you don't hear it, but you sense it, that what's this, you know, white gentleman doing, you know, just all the time, you know, with this woman, taking her around and all of that. Because, like you said, we would go grocery shopping and do all of those kind of things. But it was, you know, other than, you know, people that I knew who would tell me, you know, bring up this, you know, fact, am I dating her? What am I doing? This kind of stuff. I didn't, you know, because in the community they knew what I was doing, so they didn't, you know, I had no problem.
But what did
no
you say? How did you explain it?
To my friends?
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
that?
Yeah, to the people who are asking the questions or teasing you, what did you say?
Well, this is the thing about this, you know, in your mind you think, oh, you know, they're just ignorant, they don't know. But subconsciously I listened to it, and I sort of would not want to give the impression that I was a couple. I mean, as ludicrous as that sounds, mm-hmm. I started to be wary of people thinking that. So I didn't want people to have the idea, you know, that idea had never crossed my mind. And just this fact that some people might think that made me just wary and sort of not want to give anybody do anything I could not to give the idea that, you know, that I'm here to help her. You know, it's nothing like that.
Yeah. But I mean, you're in your 30s. She's in her late 80s. How could, you know?
I know. I mean, it's ludicrous.
I would like to have been somewhere and listened to Coach explain it. Like if there were, you know, some of her friends who said, what is this young white guy following you around for? I would love to have heard her explain it. How would she have put it?
Well, Coach told me, you know, people often think the wrong thing before they think the right thing. But as far as Coach, to me, and this is the strength that she gave me, she felt I came at that time for a reason. I mean, just the timing of it, you know, when I happened to be there right when her husband got sick, she felt as though I was there for a reason. And that's why she had no hesitation, no doubt about, you know, it. And she didn't hesitate for a minute. You know, I just followed her lead. It didn't bother her. It didn't bother me. You know, that's the way she was. She didn't let that, as she would say, get next to her. Those kind of things, she wouldn't let them get next to her.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. Craig Dudnick found himself in a most unusual relationship. He'd made friends with the woman who worked as the cook at his college fraternity house. Her name was Viola, but everyone called her Coach. She helped him make his way through college. Years later, he was working as a freelance cameraman, and he moved to Chicago, and he moved in with Coach. He wasn't a full-time caregiver. He still took new assignments, and in fact looked at Chicago as a place with more opportunities.
I thought this was a way to develop my business. I thought it was a good step. Being there with Coach was helping it. It wasn't hurting it. And now with her, I had a support system too. And for once, the business was doing well.
So all this time that you spent with Coach never left you feeling that you'd had to push your own or set your own ambition aside?
Oh, not at all. It was helping. I was doing so much better there than I had been doing in Syracuse.
Did you know at that time that you were going to be with her until the day that she died?
Yes, I did.
You'd made that decision?
Yes. I really hadn't worked it out in terms of, like, if I would, you know, fall in love with somebody and get married, how that would work. But I really believe in my heart I'd made up my mind anyway that I was going to stay with her. I really think that I have to just say I just love the person. I love Coach, you know, not in the romantic way between a man and a wife, but I just love that woman, you know, and I guess I fell in love with her seeing all that she was doing and all, you know, all that she was able to do to support all of these people, you know, and for the wonderful person she was.
Craig Dudnick was busy enough with his video assignments. Only once did he turn his camera on Coach. And she wasn't talking about her relationship with Craig when he filmed her, but she might as well have been.
Well, one thing I believe in, maybe a lot of people don't, but if you love everybody and try to treat everybody right, you'll make mistakes though sometimes. I believe that will carry you farther than any way.
As the years passed, though, Craig Dudnick had to spend more and more time caring for Coach and less time working. By now she was into her 90s, and he began to worry if they'd have enough money to get by.
You know, she couldn't cook without making a mess, and her dementia got worse. She eventually got to the point where she couldn't talk. In essence, she was becoming almost childlike, where she needed the care that she had always given. She needed that care herself. And I got to the point where I realized that I couldn't pay for this. And I tried to explain it to her, which was really hard. That night, this woman pulls up and says, Craig, come out. I have a gift for Coach, your birthday present. I came out in the car. This is a big, heavyset woman. She was like maybe 275 pounds, full of life, jovial, like all of Coach's friends. And she said, look at it. And I'm expecting to see $10 or $15. And I look at the check, and it's $10,000. And I was like in shock. you know, you hear about these things happening, you know, where you need it and then somebody just hands you the money. She knew nothing about our financial condition. She said, oh, this is just something. My father had left me some money and I'd always wanted to do this for Coach. You know, in her time, she had been a student like me and Coach had taken special care of her like the rest of us. And this was her chance to pay Coach back. I said, you have to come inside with me and give this to Coach. And Coach didn't really understand, and that made me sad in a way. But then I was able to take care of her the rest of the time. The money provided that. You know, I never had to leave her.
Craig Dudnick stayed with Coach for 20 years. And Coach was close to her 100th birthday when she passed away.
A long time before, she said, Craig, I believe I'm going to die early in the morning. And by then I had moved my bed down on the main level, and her bed was in the living room. And I remember I woke up at 1:30 in the morning, and she was breathing heavy, you know. She couldn't catch her breath. And I came down, and I was holding Coach's hands. I saw her try to catch her breath, and then I just watched her eyes roll back, and, you know, that was it. Gone.
Was it a peaceful death for her?
Yes. She just went on.
Was there anything that she had told you, Craig, in the time leading up to that, that made it easier for you to get through that time?
There was one piece of advice that she had really given me that was really helpful. She said, remember, Craig, you'll always have somewhere to turn. And during this caregiving, Coach couldn't understand that I didn't have the same deep... I had faith, I thought, but not like hers, where she absolutely knew everything would be right and everything would work out. And one thing I remembered, just one time when Tinsley was sick, I caught a sight of her praying by her bed. And it was hard for her to get down on her knees at that point. And it was just such a sight to see her praying there. And then I did the same thing. When it got tough with her, I would just pray and I would just pour myself out in these prayers. Just please help me to do this.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. Coach and her husband Tinsley didn't have children of their own. And shortly after Coach died, Craig learned that they had left him their house.
This was something, you know, that really struck me. I had to trace back the ownership, and I looked in the safe deposit box. Her and her husband had given me the house before I moved to Evanston. Before I moved, they had all that worked out. I saw it on the documents.
And you didn't know about it at the time?
No. She knew about all of this. Maybe she had an idea of where this was going, but I didn't, you know.
Well, you did say she had that kind of insight.
I'm telling you, she was one in a million. This was one remarkable person.
You know, the one thing about your story that strikes me, Craig, is that we bump into people all the time. We make close friends, then we move somewhere, and the friendship dies away. But, I mean, in your case, could you ever have imagined, would you ever have guessed that this encounter with Coach back when you were an undergrad at university would end up changing your life the way that it did?
Oh, no. But I just remember how miserable I... That's what I remember. Going from being miserable to becoming a happy person and just feeling this incredible debt to this woman. And she did this for other people, not just me. There's not a day that goes by that I don't think of her.
Craig Dudnick joined me from the studios of WBEZ in Chicago.
Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. I looked over Jordan, and what did I see? Coming for to carry me home. A band of angels coming after me. Coming for to carry me home. Swing low.
We have a photo on our website of Craig and Viola Hilsman, the friend he called Coach. There's also a link to the documentary that Coach inspired Craig to shoot called Evanston's Living History. You can check that out. It's all at thestory.org. And a special thanks to Jacqueline Grossman in Evanston for writing in to tell us about Craig and Coach. If you have a story about an unusual friendship and how that changed you, well, I'd like to hear from you. Stories like Craig's are the ones that help us all appreciate how those, in our own past, continue to make a difference to us today. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story.
The Story is a production of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
American Public Media.